Suzanne Farrell's name will forever be linked with George Balanchine's, and with good reason. She practically inhabited his choreography in ways that few other dancers have ever managed to do before or since. She's made it a priority to restore to the stage ballets of his that had not been danced for quite a while. And tonight, in her company's first New York appearance, they'll be performing Pithoprocta as part of City Center's Fall for Dance project. I'm thrilled to welcome back to the show Suzanne Farrell, along with Elizabeth Holochuk, who'll be dancing the lead. Hi.
Hello. Good morning.
So how long has it been since Pithoprocta has been performed?
Actually, we performed it at the Kennedy Center last fall, but prior to that, it hadn't been performed since 1968, so it's a great architectural balletic find.
Well, 40 years, or in this case, 39 years, mm-hmm. if we want to be technical about it. Why so long? Is it not one of the good Balanchine dances?
No, it's a great piece, but it was lost. You know, we don't have... Back in those days, we weren't in the habit of taking videos. Video didn't exist.
People didn't write things down?
No. There wasn't time. And besides, in dance, you live in the moment, and you think that's the most important moment, and it is. But, you know, that kind of preservation is sort of not in your view at that time. But we have a wonderful opportunity called the Balanchine Preservation Initiative, which has allowed us to find these lost ballets or rarely performed ballets and restore them. And we have about 9 of them that I have done for my company, and all of them at various stages of lostness. Some have, Pithoprocta had an archival video of the ensemble and myself, but my partner, Arthur Mitchell, was not there that day that we took the tape, so he's not there.
But he's around. Would he remember what he did 40 years ago?
Arthur and I are good friends, and I called him and I asked him, and he said, "Oh, Susie, I don't remember anything." You know, so I
could
did remember.
Play the music and then start doing it? We went here and then we did that.
That was a long time ago. And also, it wasn't performed that much because Arthur left the company to start forming his own dance theater of Harlem. So when he left, the piece just went out of the repertoire.
It was an unusual pas de deux, wasn't it?
It was quite unique. It was about, Pithoprocta means action by probabilities, a Greek word. And so it was also the time of astronauts going to the moon and all of the world being fascinated with weightlessness and bouncing along and turning upside down and all kinds of odd images. So it's very special in that sense.
So you were meant to look weightless. You've said that it was probably the most difficult thing I had ever done.
The music is based on Ioannis Xenakis's music is based on architect and mathematics, and 50-some-odd instruments in the orchestra are all playing something different. And so you have, in a sense, 50-some-odd ways of doing the ballet if you choose, or hearing the music 50 different ways. So it's a lot of fun that way.
But you mean, in other words, you have options? You don't have to do
The choreography is there, but you can highlight different sounds that you hear.
Elizabeth, is this the most difficult thing you've ever done?
It was definitely the most unique role I've ever been given to dance. I had never seen a piece like it, let alone danced a piece like it. So it was a challenge at first.
It doesn't use all of the normal things we associate with ballet?
It uses ballet, but not necessarily classical steps. So it takes the classical repertory of dance and takes it further. So it was definitely, I was definitely being asked to move in a way I'd never been asked before.
And you performed the work in the original production as well. I mean, the one last year.
Last year I did, yes.
How long does it take to feel comfortable with something like this?
Well, we worked on the piece in bits and pieces. There was a little bit of trial and error with certain parts. Does this feel better if we try the step this way than maybe a different way? And it was sort of like putting a puzzle together once we had a few of the pieces and it came together more quickly. And by the end, by the time performance time came around, it felt like second nature almost.
Would, if Balanchine were alive today and he saw this performance, would he recognize his dance, do you think?
He was amusing because he would say, I frequently don't know what it shouldn't what it should be, but I know what it shouldn't be. And he would sort of work backwards. And I think also that he would approve of what we did. You know, he took Petit Pas and other choreographers from his era and reworked them, so it's natural.
And he reworked his own
of
when
course.
He had a different dancer, because every dancer is capable of doing different things.
And many of his ballets, even in his lifetime, were lost, and he would go back to the same music, and everybody would maybe remember one step or something and piece them together. It's you frequently work backwards.
And how much of it was improvised, at least to work it out?
Well, when I would get to a piece of a measure in the music, several measures in the music where I didn't have any reference. Nothing was going on. I said to myself, oh, that must be Arthur's passages. So I just filled in something. It was quite challenging because I had to put a man in, and I knew a man was there, and I didn't want to overuse him because I had to put a man in, and I didn't want to underuse him because I didn't have anything for him to, any visual for him to do at the time.
Of course, Balanchine didn't consider men to be the most important part of dance. He once in a while would say things like, well, men are there to pick up the women and the ballerinas. Didn't he say that?
Not really. Not really.
A number of the male dancers have told me that they had to fight that prejudice.
Well, you have the extraordinary ballet Apollo and rubies and things. But, you know, Mr. B respected dancers a lot.
Elizabeth, is it strange when you think that you're one of only two dancers to have ever danced this role?
It's definitely a gift. I almost feel like it was created for me simply because it hadn't been done for so long and people haven't seen the piece. And I almost feel like Matthew and I, we've had a Balanchine ballet created for us, and so it's really wonderful to be able to dance that and just to have that gift.
But it is different from other Balanchine works, isn't it? You said that it was very much in response to what was going on at the time, and you do have this music by the Greek composer Yannis Xenakis, which we listened to a little bit of. It's not what I normally associate with ballet music. Even modern ballet music.
No, it's very...
It's percussive.
It's very wild in a sense. There's no other ballet in the Balanchine repertoire like it.
So what was he thinking that day?
I guess he was just intrigued by the music. When I did a little research, and Xenakis actually studied somewhat with Nabokov in Paris, who did the music for Don Quixote, so it probably was a challenge for Mr. B.
Did you know that Elizabeth was the right person for this?
She's a smart girl, and she's willing, and...
Did you see certain similarities in the way she dances and the way you used to dance?
I don't know. I never saw myself do this ballet, but you know, it's tricky music. So you know, you have to. And I've known her as she came up through my school at Kennedy Center, and I trust her, and I know that she will give it her all. And I think she has that. A lot of my spirit, a lot of my willingness and abandon. And not worried about an image and that you have to look a certain way, that you can have another image.
Elizabeth, how did Suzanne go about teaching you this part?
She approached me one day. I was revisiting the Kennedy Center program where I had gone and taken class, and she asked me, would you be willing to work with me after class? I have this project that we're going to do in the fall, and I'm trying to reconstruct this ballet. So I was excited to get the chance to work on it. It hadn't really occurred to me that I would dance the role. So I was just happy to sort of get a glimpse of what we were going to do. And we went back to the video that she had and sort of listened to the music and tried to figure out our own set of counts and way of listening and sort of, when you hear this woodblock, it's this count, and when the cellos come in, it's 10, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and we went back and just sort of slowly started laying the groundwork for the whole piece, and
we've become good mathematicians.
Yes.
Well, your company doesn't just perform Balanchine ballets. In fact, you do works by Jerome Robbins, Maurice Béjart, and you've choreographed some yourself. But when you're doing a Balanchine work, is there a certain kind of a Balanchine type dancer that you would want to enlist for it?
I suppose it depends what the ballet is, the music, that particular dancer's response to that particular music. It's very individual, but it's also nice to extend yourself as a dancer and not do only what's your comfort zone.
The reason I ask is I remember talking to you in the past about the fact that before you went to the School of American Ballet, you had been turned down for a scholarship when you auditioned for Toronto's National Ballet School. I don't know what they were thinking, but perhaps Balanchine saw something in you that they didn't see, and he perhaps saw somebody who would be good for the kinds of things that he created.
Well, I think that I was young. I had no image. I had no reputation when I first came, so I had nothing to lose. And I just worked and tried to not get eliminated from the company, you know, lived in fear of my job and to do what he wanted. And I...
Do you remember your audition?
I actually asked him once what he saw in me, and he didn't really answer, but over time I've begun to think that perhaps it was just my willingness to try and not paint him into a corner, because no choreographer wants to repeat what they've done before. And it was very much, became very much a collaboration. And also, music is important to me. It makes me move differently. Every piece of music makes me move differently. And Mr. B was a great musician, and he responded, all his ballets are the visual of what the music is, and I think he liked that in me. Gave us a basis for understanding each other.
My guests are Suzanne Farrell, the artistic director of the Suzanne Farrell Ballet, and Elizabeth Holochuk, who's one of the soloists with the company. She'll be performing the lead in Pithopracta tonight at 8 o'clock at City Center. And if you want more information about that, ticket information and the like, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. So, Elizabeth, how did you come to Susan Farrell's company?
As she said, I was a student of hers in the summer at the Exploring Ballet with Susan Farrell program that the Kennedy Center Education Department has. And after one summer, we have a performance for the parents at the end of the three-week program, and she came up to me and asked me if I wanted to apprentice with the company in the fall, and I think I was a little speechless, but managed to stammer, of course, and so that's how I ended up with the company.
Aren't you from Canada?
Originally, yes.
So it's interesting that Suzanne was turned down by the Toronto National Ballet School.
I was too, so.
Were you?
Yeah. You see, it's,
well,
it's destiny.
There's a great Balanchine tradition here, isn't there? But Suzanne, you said that that you never saw yourself dance. You never saw yourself dance any of the dances, although I'm sure you've seen film or video or some of them. But you have a very different sense of what the dance would be than the rest of the world, wouldn't you? Could you enlist people who remember seeing it? Would there be anybody who would have that kind of photographic memory?
I've tried, you know, and Arthur couldn't remember. And
well, he's done many dances since.
Yes, yes. But I am restoring another one for our season down in Washington called Ragtime, and Arthur was in that, and I have a little bit of footage of that. So, you know, one piece, the precious moments that we do have, we retain, and they're little jewels, and then the rest you fill in.
I wonder about, well, you fill in the with
in the spirit,
in the spirit,
spirit
of
the
even
ballet.
Though it wouldn't be necessarily mm-hmm. the same thing. But you have to wonder just how many great ballets have simply disappeared because nobody kept a record of them. It's almost like a jazz musician playing in a club, and the people who were there heard this incredible mm-hmm. performance, but mm-hmm. that's the end of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did over 400 ballets, and certainly we don't have 400 that we can resurrect.
Well, he did create 20 for you. How many of those are you able to, have you been able to resurrect?
We do most of them. We're in the process of doing most of them. We've done about 10.
So and you started at 16, and how old were you when you left the company?
I joined the company when I was 16, and we performed at City Center, so I have lots of fun memories going back there.
Is that a great place to dance?
I think so. I think there's a lot of wonderful, what I call dust of famous performers that were there before, and it's very palpable to be on that stage, and or any theater. I love being in the theater.
You also, Elizabeth, were at the American Ballet Theatre, weren't you, and the New York City Ballet?
I danced with the School of American Ballet, and as a child I performed with New York City Ballet and APT as well.
And now you have Suzanne Farrell. What's taking you so long to come to New York? Is it harder for a ballet company to arrange for performance in this city?
Well, we have a very fragile existence at the Kennedy Center. We perform almost annually, but my hope is that we will have longer seasons. Our repertoire is unlike any other company that exists, and that's why we are valid in what we do. And so my goal is to have longer seasons for my dancers so we can work together. I would love to choreograph something myself. I'm pretty much my own staff, so but I like that. I like teaching the dancers, and because they want to hear what I have to say, and it gives us a closeness and a uniqueness before it becomes so large that you don't know who your director is or feel comfortable with your director. So it's very special in that sense.
But how many dancers?
We are 20.
The dance in general has had a hard time in recent years. Any number of famous choreographers have had to disband their own companies. One of the most famous of all the ballet companies had to leave New York and moved to Chicago and struggled there. So is it because there's less interest in dance? Well, I know when I go to see dance, the audience tends to either be older or young women who look like they want to be dancers themselves and not much in between.
Well, I suppose everything goes through a period where you have feast and famine periods, and now there are a lot of other opportunities for children to join. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and it's just a big world out there and a lot of different venues to go to. But I think we would like to have those audiences larger, and I think part of the initiative, as Balanchine Preservation Initiative, opens that up to other generations of dancers and all generations of dancers. You know, I run into people who saw me, whose grandmother saw me dance, and their daughter saw me dance, and their
daughters
are. They'd
be shocked to see you right now because you don't look like that.
I feel young, but I feel young, I think, because I love what I'm doing.
Why hasn't the New York City Ballet done more Balanchine? Did they see themselves as going in another direction after you left and Peter Martins took over?
I don't know. I don't know.
Have you ever been called by them to help them reconstruct some of the great dances?
No, I haven't. But, I live in the moment. I'm happy in Washington. I love my dancers. And
well, Arlene Croce, the critic, once called you an inherently daring dancer. She said that you always look slightly off balance. But you told me once that Balanchine said to you, lean against the air, and or something like that, didn't
he? Hold on to the air.
Hold on to the
yes.
air.
And I pass that on to my dancers also.
So have you figured out, she said it, Suzanne told me it took her a little while to figure it out, but then she got it. Have you gotten it too?
Well, every day is a little different. You never know what's going to happen when you get into the studio. So every day we just kind of take that first step and see what we can create. And
well, there is something magical about what happens to dancers. Another great dancer from the past said, I think once, you leap against the sky and then pause.
Mm. It's a very special life to dance, on any level, actually.
Thank you both so much for being with us, Suzanne Farrell, Artistic Director of the Suzanne Farrell Ballet, Elizabeth Holochek, the soloist who will be performing Pitho Practa tonight at 8 o'clock at the City Center. For more information, you can go to our website, wnyc.org. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.